All right, everyone. So today I have Lauren Hill with me. Lauren is my artistic career coach, and I'm stoked to have her on because we've been working together since July. And in the past few months, I've been able to get a studio job as a designer. I've figured out some of the mental chaos I've had around my creativity. And before Lauren was coaching, she was an art dealer. So tell me about that, Lauren. I would love for you to tell me more about what brought you to coaching and that career.
Yeah. And I just want to say too that it's been such a gift to get to work with you and watch you blossom. And I feel like every time my clients get celebrate things and have major exciting things happen in their lives and careers, I get to live vicariously through them. So it's been an honor and it continues to be such a privilege to get to work with you. So thank you. I studied illustration in college, so I'm an artist as well. And after college, I graduated, and so it was pretty much like a major recession going on. And so I think a lot of people who can relate, especially if they're like graduating or trying to find jobs around 2020, similar situation, but very different. That was like the first time I became my own career coach. I really was like, okay, Googling like how to find a job and what I basically Googled like what a career coach would do, and I became my own coach. And so I got clear on what my values were, my talents, like how I could pitch myself to a creative job, because I decided I didn't want to be an illustrator. Like that was just not the route that I was going to go at the time. But I wanted to be in the arts. And so thankfully, I interviewed for quite a few different jobs, but then there was this Craigslist listing for an art gallery in the Napa Valley where I was living. I moved back in with parents, and they were looking for an intern at the time to work for free. And I was like, okay, well, I'm babysitting and I'm just like trying to find something. Maybe I'll just do this until I find that the actual thing, And so I go into the interview and find out that the owner had been in a bicycle accident and was in a coma.
My gosh.
And so I was hired right away to work. I think I worked one day for free, and then he passed away. And then I was hired full time, and within a couple days I started selling artwork. Like it just happened so quickly, and I had no background in sales. Well, I worked at, like some clothing stores before that, but it was only background in sales. And it kind of just happened serendipitously. Of course, like obviously a death is very sad. He was very beloved in the art industry in the valley, in the whole Bay Area, because his gallery had been around for 20 years. But it was like this weird situation where I just decided to say yes to something, even though, I could have looked at like, oh, this is below me or whatever. I'm not getting.
Yeah, but I love that you just went for it. And I've been on Craigslist before too, where I'm like looking at job postings, and a lot of times it's like you can get it very personal in right away with if you just are willing to show up. And some of the jobs, like maybe they're not legit, but then others are very legit.
You just never know where those opportunities are going to be. And so it's like, just keep looking. So that's something that happened really, like me selling art happened so quickly. And then I ended up, they got a new owner for the gallery, and then I ended up selling millions of dollars of artwork during the 6 years that I worked there and working with artists all over the world, really, and collectors all over the world, shipping, 14-foot sculpture, outdoor sculpture to Mexico, and helping one of my clients in Maui decide where he was going to place like a bronze sculpture out in his garden, and like getting to work with celebrities that came in. I actually Whoopi Goldberg helped me.
I love this.
She sold a $12,000 sculpture for me, basically, because it helped me close that sale, because she came in and I was working with this client and they were all like so excited that Whoopi Goldberg was in there.
Yeah,
And
I
like my director was, she was working with Whoopi and I was working with this client. And I told them, I was like, because they were already kind of on the fence
Yeah.
about it. And then I was like, what a great story to tell people that when they come over and they see these ball and jack sculpture, it was like the game of the ball and
All
jacks out
right.
in the garden. Like you can be like, yeah, this is the day that Whoopi Goldberg came woman, and I got to meet her, and you know, like, what a great tell people, and then that like sold them right away. So
I love it. Yeah, sometimes sales is storytelling and connection, and then that really does it for people. So I have to ask, so it sounds like you sold sculpture, paintings. Do you have any stories about the artists that you worked with, maybe some of the other clients that came in? Because I know nothing about the gallery world, but what I am learning is that there are some galleries tucked away from cities in the US, and that's the case with yours too, is in Napa. But there are a lot of people who buy art in smaller towns.
Yeah. And because it's a vacation city, vacation town or city, whatever you want to call it, you know, it's wine country. So people are traveling there from all over the world. And so it's a great place. You know, you're on vacation, you're looking for art. A lot of people have time to look for art then. And that's actually how, so I worked for Toshin Publishing, the art book publisher, after the gallery. And that's how I had the connection with Toshin, is because we sold, actually I was the top salesperson for this Annie Leibovitz book that we, it was at the time, it came out for $2,500. It was a limited edition art book that came with Dan. It's called a sumo book. So it's very large. It's like the largest book in the world, basically. Mixed with a stand, it's signed by Annie. It's a limited edition. And they were $2,500 when they first came out. They're like $8,000 now. This gallery I worked for, other than Toshin, we were the largest wholesaler that sold these books for them. Like, we sold more than any other place in the world. So it just goes to show you like what kind of clientele are coming in, and like the reach that we had at that gallery, at this small little gallery. I mean, there was three galleries up and down the valley, so it's like these rooms. But going back to, and we can talk about Toshin too at some point.
Definitely. Art books, art publishing, that's something I think about, because now that I'm graphic designing, I love print, and I wish more people asked for print projects. And realistically, the only people who do are usually artists or designers, like someone who wants to preserve their work for an archival purpose. Yeah.
And you know, art, I mean, books are like, they're never going away. People will be like, oh, books, you know, like books are dying or whatever. And I'm like, no, they're not. Like, they're never going
away. They're never going away. I love books. I worked at an art library in college, and you can put like a whole artist's life's work in a book and then like do it maybe like 1,000 times by different authors, and there's always going to be like something special to say. So I love art books. Yeah,
especially because you're in design too. It's like there's just something so wonderful about seeing things printed, you know, they're just on the computer.
Exactly. I love just like throwing my phone somewhere and then going into a corner and looking at a book.
So yeah, really, or IRL, looking at art on the walls too. Yeah. Going back to what you were asking about, like the artists that we worked with. So there's this artist, her name is Kate Salen Friend. I sold probably, I don't know, like $300,000 worth of her art, maybe more, who knows. But she sold these paintings. The main thing she sold was around $2,500. Sometimes bigger, sometimes smaller. But
so what dimensions and like what was her subject matter? I'm curious.
I actually have one of her paintings in my house too.
Oh, great.
The like average painting I sold of hers was around like 30 inches by 40 inches. I don't know what they go for now, but it was around like $2,000 to $3,000. And they sold out. It was my easiest thing I ever saw. And people loved them. And she, it's so funny, she just signed up for my workshop too, because I'm friends with her as well.
Oh yeah, your portfolio workshop this Thursday. Yeah. I signed up too. I'm excited for it. Yeah.
And how cool that, you know, she sold millions of dollars worth of her paintings, and she's signing up for my workshop. Like, you know, she's still learning. She's still out there trying to develop her skills and things. Like, she's not above, you know,
learning. Or connection. That's how, you know, I was talking to my dad about this yesterday. You know, like realistically, you never stop learning, because your skill set stops growing if you're not learning or trying new skills or trying to reframe your work. And then that is your limiting factor, really.
I mean, that's why people work with coaches too. It's like, yeah, you can graduate a certain level, but it's like, what's next? Like, let's go. Let's reach beyond that. So anyway, going back, I feel like I have so many things to say. So
yeah, I love this too, because actually I'm learning so much about you. So
I don't know if the coffee or like just what, but I'm, yeah. So, and I feel like this is a different dynamic for us too.
Oh, right. Normally I'm like talking your ear off and telling you about all my art and adjacent art problems. Yeah.
Because when I'm coaching, it's like, it's all about my clients. Like, I really try to keep the focus on them. And of course, I, you know, share different things that would be relevant. But
I remember you saying that you did graduate during a recession. And actually, that was like something that really gave me buy-in with you, because I was like, the economy is probably the worst it's been for me in a minute. And I just like needed help like focusing and hunkering down. And so I actually really respect it when like people start their careers during like hard times and find their values. So that's just a little note.
Yeah. And it's like, that's just, you know, we could talk about mental traps, right? Like, is one of the traps. You can look for proof of why things aren't going to work for you, or you can look for proof for how things are going to work for you, why they're going to work for you. And that's just a distraction. That's just an excuse. You can focus on the recession is at the worst. Like, there's not many jobs. Or you can choose to believe that there's a job out there for me. There's the right job is out there for me, and I can find it if I put myself out there.
Yeah. And so much of art, when making an art career, I found at least, is like taking the breadcrumbs for connection and meeting people in real life. When I started designing, it was during the pandemic, really. And that was a spooky time for me, because I can actually look back 4 years ago, and I remember that it was peak pandemic. No one was really allowed to work in person. And I was like, okay, well, it's just me and my laptop. I better start firing off emails if I'm gonna find a job. And eventually I did find one, but you know, it's like, since times have changed, it's nice to actually connect in person, still have the opportunity to connect with people like you in a Zoom capacity, and then kind of get the best of both worlds. Yeah, but not to backtrack a little bit too much, I know you were about to tell me a story. I want to hear it.
Yeah, so Kate Salen, right? Yeah. So she paints with oil and gold leaf.
Okay.
And so she literally has a portfolio that shines, like it glistens in the sunlight, but she uses gold. And people just were so drawn. Her fastest sell paintings were the birch tree paintings. So there's birch trees and then there's gold leaf. And she does this really beautiful Tiffany blue color in the background. Mm-hmm. Like, so many people love those paintings. And she does some other styles too, mostly nature. You know, she grew up in rural California and like around nature and like the countryside and stuff. So that's where her inspiration is drawn from. But she just, you know, she tapped into something that really works. And it took time. Like, I knew her when she was doing a different style, and then it, like, right when she shifted her style and it began to sell a little bit more. So it was really interesting to watch that progression happen too. And so as you're creating artwork, you know, it does take some time sometimes to really figure out what your style is, and then, like, you know, what is authentic to you, what feels exciting and natural, and then at the same time, like, well, what's going to sell? Like, what do people connect with you and connect with your art? Like, the inner and the outer, kind of, you know.
Because you can't ignore that, right? Like, and I think I see a lot of artists, early career, I remember, where there was a lot of people pursuing art around me. Around graduation, we would sell, like, illustrations, t-shirts. And, you know, I think sometimes people think kind of black and white, and they're like, well, I either go, like, sell my own work, and it can be really, like, identity-based, though. Like, identity-based work, I think, can sometimes be hard to sell, because it's like, how is someone supposed to really connect with something that's so deeply personal to you? But then also, it's like, how do you balance the fact that you're an artist, and you probably do this work because you have, like, certain values and, like, a story that you want to imbue in your work?
Yeah. And that's what, you know, you can, if you believe so deeply in that personal work and you believe that it's sellable and you want to go out and sell it, like, that is possible too. Like, you can be those people that connect with them. And it's like, I always go back to this story that I heard about this TikToker selling farts in a jar for $1,000.
I never heard of this. So farts in a jar.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, this girl can sell farts in a jar for $1,000. Like, you can sell whatever you want to. You know, like, if you believe in something and you figure you can, like, figure out a way to make it, just, like, believe in it so much and the value of it and the worthiness of it and the intrigue of it, it's like, you can go out and sell it.
Yeah. I think you have to really believe it, though, and just stand behind it. And that's part of it. confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, when was the moment you decided to become a career coach for other people?
Yeah. So I was working at Toshin. I was a wholesale rep for them. So I sold their art books up and down the West Coast. I sold them to places like Nordstrom and Pottery Barn and RH. I sold them to the museums. So I got to go visit, you know, all the LA museums, the Getty, LACMA, the Broad. And then I would go up to San Francisco and Seattle and go to the museums up there and sell the books and the bookstores. So it was such a fun job too. I got to like travel and connect with like all of these cool stores. But I also felt like there was a limit. There was a limit to like how much I could make. There was a limit to like how much I was growing in that job. There was a limit to like the creativity that I could have. And I always knew from a young age that I was going to have a big platform. Like I just saw myself either, you know, speaking on stages or publishing books or like, you know, selling art to like millions of people. I just feel like I'm made for something larger. And so I was like trying to figure out, and the same thing happened when I wanted to move to LA from the gallery job. That was another time. It's a whole nother story that I won't get into, but that was another time that I became my own career coach again. And it was a whole journey that I went on to find this job in LA. So this time around, I was like, okay, I know I want to have my own business. I want to like, I just didn't know what I wanted to do exactly though. So first I was like, maybe I want to be a travel blogger. And then I was like, oh, maybe I want to be an art agent, like an artist agent. So I was like dabbling in a couple of those things. And then I was really into personal development as well. I got sober 10 years ago. And so health and wellness and like personal development is very inspiring and something I'm passionate about. So I was like, oh, maybe I want to do health coaching. Help people. And so that's actually how I got into coaching. Is I did a health coaching certification through Institute of Integrative Nutrition, and I started coaching people for free. And then through that, people started coming to me for their life purpose and like of the career side of things. And I was like, oh, wait, actually, like my gift is I have this whole background in art and like these really interesting careers that I've created for myself. And I know I've always been about my life's purpose and like getting closer to that with every step that I take. Maybe I can help people with that. And then that's how it kind of transformed into career coaching creatives.
Wow. I love that. Yeah. It's very purpose and mission driven. And so you didn't think you were going to coach artists at first.
You know, the artist agent idea was like the closest do that, but that was still me selling their art.
I could also see you as a travel blogger, by the way. I kind of giggled because I was like, I love that. Who wouldn't want to be a travel blogger? That's like one of my little dreams, and sometimes I just pretend to be one just because it's fun. And so, sorry, did you just take on a client who was an artist and then it happened, or did you decide? And then,
you know, I think I remember this girl that it was right around, sometimes I can't remember what came first. I was doing free coaching. And so I was also doing free consultations. And I think it was right around, so I went from health coaching to life coaching to being like a spiritual healer. Cause I was like, I'm really spirituality too, and I did this really like woo woo,
like meditation, tarot card pulling,
and like some that like people don't really know about. Right around that point, I was doing some consultations, and I remember this exact girl that I spoke with, and she was coming to me about her life's purpose, and there was just a click, and it was like she's a creative as well, and she was like in between jobs or something. And there was just this like spark of like, oh, wait. And I was working with a career coach at the time too. And I remember thinking, I don't want to copy my coach. Like she's a career coach. Then I'm just like her. And then I talked to her about it and she's like, no, Lauren, like you're such a different coach anyway, because you're coaching for creatives. Like that's such a need that, you know, artists and creative people, it's so needed out there. Like that's so perfect for you. you know? And that was when I shifted and started selling my career coaching for creatives package.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he's witch because that means I got to work with you. I feel like everything always plays out in somewhat of a divine timing, or maybe it's kismet, maybe it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, actually, you know, too, while we're on this topic is, you know, I'm curious as well, during our time together so far, like, what do you feel like has been your biggest transformation? Like, what, is there anything that you're proud of or anything that's really shifted in you since we started working together?
Yeah, I think, okay, so I was someone who really knew that, like, I needed to put myself out there in order to get clients and new work. And I think the way I approached my creative career previously in the past 5 years is just like put out a ton of offers, like learn along the way. And in that process, I discovered that there were a lot of things that I was pretty good at and I could handle the client side no matter what, because those are just, you know, relationship skills, like communicating and learning what other people need and how you can provide for them in your visual work. But I think in that process, I kind of abandoned myself and my personal values and creativity. I like lost touch with like what actually worked for me, like what was going to be supportive. Also, there's just certain things that I used to do for money, like selling TikToks, which I literally could not do anymore because the market had changed. And even if I pitched myself, it just wasn't coming through. And I was like forced to reckon with the fact that like, there are a lot of things I used to do with money, but if I get real with myself, like I don't particularly enjoy doing user experience design for tech companies, for example. Like I don't want to do that. And I think even just in our first session, I told you I wanted to work with musicians, podcasters, writers, live event specialists, and like those were truly the creatives that I cared about, whose work like I felt could be supported by my work. And I think I was just like so embarrassed of even like admitting that before, even though there's nothing embarrassing about it. I think I was just like afraid and constantly like in this state of like, oh, like I'm not ready for it, I'll get there eventually. But when I thought about it, it's like, well, I've been designing professionally for definitely over 5 years at this point now, like maybe even like a decade if you count some of like the earlier work I did, even though it wasn't full time. It's like, how many more decades am I gonna wait until I start doing what I want? And it was like this old model too from school, where like even as like an urban studies undergraduate, when I was like learning about city planning, they didn't let us do city planning until like my senior year. So it's like you had to wait 4 years and to do the thing that you wanted to do. It was like all this like foundational learning beforehand. And I don't know, I think like what I'm starting to learn about myself and also creative careers is that sometimes you kind of just have to like try it. You have to like take little risks, find people who are willing to like take that risk with you. So I guess to answer your question, like I have a little bit more faith in myself now to take some of those risks forward, because I got like so scared and like comfortable making money and a career in a path that worked for me monetarily, but like literally no other ways, like spiritually in my self-fulfillment category, I was like burnt out. I could not do it anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that spiritual piece, it's like, even if you don't believe in God or you feel like, you know, you're not a spiritual person, you can still understand that spiritual piece in different terms. Like if you know, there's something magical about nature, right? The seasons, and that when you stare off at a tree and you witness the wind blow the leaves around, like even as I'm saying that, I feel magic. You know, yeah. When you think about a sunset at the beach and like all the beauty of like the clouds, pink sun, you know, like the different vibrations of color peeking through, you know, there's something magical about that, whether it's spiritual, whether it's, you know, science, nature, creating this magic, it's a feeling. And like when you tap into that feeling more often, you know, it's something that you can align yourself with.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it was, I think it was Mary Kate and Ashley that
yeah.
said, I heard them on an interview one time and they were like, if you do something that you're passionate about wholeheartedly and you're so passionate about it that you work hard and you work harder because you're so passionate about it, the money will come. And yes, that might be kind of like a privileged thing to say too, because some people are struggling and like they're just trying to make ends meet, but you can still decide where you put your time and energy and build a bridge to get there. Maybe it might take you longer because you have kids that you provide for, or, you know, you don't have the privilege of like living with your parents, or your parents have never supported you, or, you know, maybe it's, you know, all these other things, but you can still put some time and energy aside to decide to take the time to go inward and be like, okay, what do I really enjoy? What am I passionate about? What am I good at? And ask yourself those questions. And that's really what, you know, my job is too, to help guide people through that, because a lot of times it's hard to ask yourself those questions and pull that information out of you. Especially if you're not the most introspective person or never done it before, you know? So
yeah, that's so good. And I think this is important to talk about, because here's the thing, like, I'm not someone with a very privileged background, yet I agree with you. And this might be a controversial statement, but I think at times, if you get good at struggling and just white knuckling your way through work, the struggle doesn't really stop. Like, it's kind of a mentality. Like, I got to a point where I was like taking on so much work, but I was still struggling and I was like afraid, even though from the outside it looked pretty good. It did not feel good. I'd never learned how to make it feel good, because that was just kind of like my modus operandi. That's like how I did things, you know? I kind of like used my own pain and parent sob stories in order to like get through things. And then on another note, I love Mary Kate and Ashley. I love them so much. But also one thing I love about them is there's all these quotes online about how when they were younger, their dad would always tell them like, no is a full sentence. Like, if there's anything you don't feel comfortable doing, especially like as child actors, like, you just say no and like, don't let people push you. And I think that's kind of protective as well. It's like, you want to be doing the things that actually feel aligned. But also at times, like if you do things that aren't aligned, I do think there's like a risk. I do think there's a risk for artists. Yeah.
And I loved you that you hit on that struggle mentality, like, because it's a energetic, it's like, it's so hard to get out of that sometimes, that victim mentality, when it feels so real. And it is real, you know, like pain, difficulties, they are real and they are painful, and they create wound too, that sometimes, you know, just end up building up so much fear, so much resentment, so much self-doubt, and we can stay stuck in that, you know, that victim mentality, that woe is me and struggle. And, you know, me having like being an addict and having alcoholism, like I was fully in this destructive struggle that I did not know how to get out of. And it was so painful. And like, I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, why can't I control my drinking? Like, why do I keep fucking shit up? Like, why do I put myself in these dangerous situations? And I could have very easily stayed in that stuck cycle and just been like continuing to drink through all the negativity that I had been creating, like these dangerous situations and the trauma and the this and the that. But then for some reason, I woke up and I realized like, oh, I need help. I can't do this alone. Like, why am I trying to do this alone? And I had to like humble myself to be like, okay, how can I get help? I need to reach out for help. And it was very scary. It's like very, you know, and I think that happens with people in their careers too, and like hiring a coach, any type of support, right? Whether it's a life coach or, you know, a weight coach or
people, I think they think that they should be able to do it on their own. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's like that messaging where it's like, oh, you should just be able to do this by yourself. But I think that's such a pervasive misconception. It's like, no one does anything alone, actually. Yeah,
we need each other.
Yeah.
So it's like, in realizing like, you know, what you want is available. Okay. If that was a possibility, what would you need to get it? Maybe you need help. Mm-hmm. Where can I look for help, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I think it's important to kind of talk about some of these vulnerable moments along the way because we're human. And, you know, I've been talking to some of my friends who I think are so dedicated. And I think one thing that I have been kind of pondering lately is how addiction and art can be a dedication in two different ways. Like maybe like we show devotion in our habits and in our art practices. And it doesn't really matter what kind of background you come from. There is like a repeated action that usually leads to a result. And if you can't like recognize like the patterns or like coach yourself by yourself to get to a place where you need to be, like recognizing you need help is valid. Yeah.
Yeah. And we all have like these blinds, you know, mm-hmm. we can't really see sometimes. It takes an objective viewer to see and to help us comprehend. And so that's what, you know, recovery, like 12-step programs, things like that, like that's why it's so helpful for addicts. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's many different programs out there, like Debtors Anonymous, there's, you know, Anxiety Anonymous, there's Overeaters Anonymous. I mean, like that's mm-hmm. There's so much free help out there for those sort of things as well. And then coaching, you know, when you're making an investment and a monetary transaction,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you're also holding yourself to like, there's something in that as well. You're like, okay, well, I just paid this dollar amount, so now I better work for it.
It's an investment. Like, yeah. You want it to pay off. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think like it's personal buy-in. There's like something psychological about it. Yeah. And it's definitely better than like calendar notification that maybe you ignore all the time, like me, you know, I'm calling myself out at times. Switching gears a little bit. So I know that this Thursday you have a portfolio workshop. And for those of us who can't attend, I will be attending. But by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be over already. So could you give us a little bit of a teaser for that workshop?
Yeah, I'll probably be running the workshop in the next, probably sometime in November or December. So if it comes out by two, feel free to reach out to me on social media, ask me about it, or, you know, send me an email.
And what is your social media, by the way?
Yeah, it's curated / mm-hmm. it's like curating art, and then / like jumping into a pool and making a splash.
Yes.
So curated / and that's what my website is too, curated.com. And you can email me or send me a message if you want to sign up for the next round of the workshop. But it's 6 simple steps to building a portfolio that shines. And through this, we'll be actually exploring like the mental traps that people fall into when they are trying to create artwork. Not only like, you know, what happens is like the overconsumption where you're like on this consumption mode of like, oh, I need to like learn all the time and find inspiration. And then that stops you from actually getting started. So if you're the type of person who wants to make art, but like you're not even making art yet because then the workshop would be for you. Or if you're the type of person who's making art, but it's just not consistent, right? Like, so maybe you have too many ideas, you get all of these ideas and you start working on something, but then you have that like shiny carrot syndrome where you get distracted and you're like, oh, but maybe I should be working on this instead. And then you don't finish the project, or you've overwhelmed and self-doubt come up and you're like, I just don't know if this is good enough. So then you distract yourself with online shopping mm-hmm. or, you know, going out and buying a million supplies because you're like, maybe I need more supplies. So if like, and just, I want to like normalize all of these things too. This is very often, I see these things in myself. Like I am not immune to these things. And I see this with my clients as well. So it's like figuring out, I'm not only going to tell you and share like what a portfolio that shines is so you can attract dream customers and clients and create raving fans and sell your work. But I'm also going to shine a light on like what gets in the way of you actually showing up consistently and building that portfolio. So it's going to be like such an incredible workshop and so much value. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I'm excited you're going to be there too. We've done some work personally, one-on-one, like, and so you've kind of seen it in, like, you've experienced some of the tools I'll be teaching and already been working on your portfolio as we speak, pretty much.
Yeah, definitely. And oh my gosh, the portfolio is a never-ending project. And yeah, healing my relationship with my portfolio as we speak. So yeah, it'll be great just to kind of like take some notes, hear your tips. And I am reframing my work a little bit. And recently, I've also been taking out text-only ads on I Love Creatives. I wanted to tell you about this because I just wrote some like silly one-liners that will be up this week. And we'll see how those do, because this is me shooting my shot. You know, just like trying to figure out along the way. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You gotta shoot your shot over and over and over.
It never stops. And you have to find ways that feel fun and good to you. And yeah, like whatever works. Yeah. It's supposed to be fun. Yeah. Okay. So last 10 minutes I have with you, I would love to ask you about your art. And you know, if you want to talk about the paintings you're working on, I love your art style. So I would love to hear from you, describe your work.
Yeah. Okay. So just like all my clients, I struggle with the same things because I'm a creative and I have so many different ideas, so many different projects I want to work on all the time. And I have my hands in a lot of different things. So I'm not only a career coach for artists or creatives, but I also teach art classes.
Right.
So I work for a nonprofit. It's called the Vic James Center. And it's actually, Vic James was my good friend's younger brother who died from an overdose. And so she named the nonprofit after him. And we actually go into we have a lot of different partnerships within West Los Angeles. And we help young people who are struggling with substance use disorder. So I teach art classes at rehabs, at a sober living. And then I'm going back into this place called Safe Place for Youth. It's an access center for people who don't have a place to live or looking for housing. Young people under the age of 25, and there's a recording studio there. They have art supply. They have free food. There's a closet that they can get clothing. It's so cool. So I'm going to be teaching a creative writing class again there. I started last week. So only am I doing that. And then of course I have my art, right? Yeah. So it's like, I have to ask myself the same questions I ask my client. Like, what is most important to you for right now? Top of all these passions, all these desires, all these ideas, if you could narrow it down to the top three things that are important to you, like how do you prioritize right now versus later? And so I do have a big vision for my art, but right now I'm really focused on, like, there's something within me that feels like coaching is the priority. I want to help millions of artists make money with their creative pursuits. Like it is such a deep desire for me. And like, that's why I'm so passionate about the work that I do, because like, we need creative people. We need artists. Like, our world's so interesting and entertaining and beautiful to live in, you know? And there is money out there to be made by creating. So with that said, I do have a big vision for my art, but I feel like it's probably going to be a little bit later in my career. Maybe in the next 10 years, I'll be more of that. But I love pastel colors. And so I paint cakes. So I use gouache and acrylic paint to paint cake paintings of cakes. And there are a lot of pastel colors. I'm actually working on one right now that has like more of a, when you use one color and then shades of it?
Like monochrome?
Monochrome.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. And so I'm doing like a monochrome painting right now with metallic white. That's going to be the highlight. And I love toys. So it's like a very naive kind of colors. And I've done Barbie paintings and other toys and things too. And then hate cupcakes and desserts and all of those things. So that's what I love to paint. I've sold some of them, but it's kind of right now, it's just fun for me. And I'm just doing it for myself. I do see later on it forming into something bigger.
Definitely. Absolutely. And you're so mission driven. I love hearing about the work that you're doing with the nonprofit. And teaching, I think, is just so, there's something like, okay, humbling is not the only word for it, but I think it really nurtures my inner child and my inner creative when I'm teaching someone else a skill. It helps me recognize how much I've grown and how much there is to impart just with the time that I've spent learning something. Like being able to tell someone like, you're doing a great job. Yeah, and like it is hard sometimes, you know, it feels very reflective. And I think there's some value in working with other people. I think that's like, obviously you do it a ton, but I sometimes see people, and even in my own life, get into the cycle of just like, oh, it's me, my work. And I don't know, it's kind of like hiding your light under a bush sometimes when you're not interacting with others. Yeah.
You hit on a great point too, because this is part of 12-step recovery, is like being of service to others and being used like that. There's something really healing that happens when you get out of yourself and into service, and you show up for people around you, whether it's volunteering, whether it's working. Like if you're ever going through grief and or like a difficult time, or you're very inward focused on your problems, like a great way to shift that energy is like, how can I help someone else? Like, what can I do to go out into the world or call a friend or, you know, whatever it is to be of service and like get out of my head?
Right.
And it's awkward sometimes too, especially if you're really processing through like grief specifically. But in those times, like we've talked about this whole episode, is like we need each other. We need other people. It's so important to have community and to interact with others. And what better way to like be there for someone else, get out of yourself. And like that is so reward. It's like it's something, there's something magical that happens in that too, when you're like, oh my gosh, like I just helped them so much, you know, like look at what I've done. Yeah. It just shifts the energy.
I love it. Amazing. Well, Lauren, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to touch on before we end the podcast today?
You know, not really, but I'm so grateful, like I said earlier too, to get to, you know, work with you.
I'm great to have you.
You're such an inspiration. You're so talented. You're so hardworking. And, you know, I'm excited to see what else is possible for you.
You can't see it right now, but I'm smiling really big. You can see it, but the audience can't. So yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm going to end our recording here. Lauren, thank you for being on the podcast. And for anyone who wants to connect with Lauren, I'll put her info in the show notes. Yeah. And thank you for joining us on the pool party.